Britain accuses Russia of planning the biggest war in Europe in decades, while Germany plays down warnings about an imminent invasion of Ukraine. Iran tells the European Union that it will not ignore its red lines during the ongoing Vienna talks for the revival of the JCPOA. And France's announcement of an upcoming military withdrawal from Mali prompts celebrations in the African country. I'm Behruz Najafi. Good to have you with us. The top story this hour, Moscow condemning as provocative Western countries' repeated claims that Russia intends to attack Ukraine. The Kremlin spokesman says the predicting dates for invading Ukraine can have adverse consequences. Dmitry Peskov, however, says that President Vladimir Putin takes no notice of such allegations. Despite repeated denials by Russia, the U.S. and its NATO allies insist on an imminent invasion of Ukraine. The latest such claim comes from the UK.
All the signs are that the plan has already, in some senses, begun. That's what our American friends think. And you're seeing these provocations now in Donbass. You're starting to see this these explosions and so on that we've been warning about for a long time. And I'm afraid to say that the plan that we're seeing is for something that could be really the biggest war in Europe since 1945, in terms of sheer scale. Have to use the tools
that we have. Johnson says the sanctions on Russia will go much further than previously suggested in case it moves to invade Ukraine. He says London and Washington will cut off Russian companies' access to U.S. dollars and British pounds if the Kremlin orders an attack. But Germany and Ukraine have pushed back against dire predictions. At a G7 meeting, German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock said it's inappropriate to resort to guessing or assuming what will happen. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has also said there is no need to panic. We've asked our Brussels correspondent Jerome Hughes what European lawmakers make of the flare-up of tensions between Russia and the West. Let's take a listen.
It's more or less the same line that the West has been pushing in recent weeks since this sort of crisis escalated. And what basically the European Union, the United States and the UK are saying is that Russia will effectively be cut off from the international financial system if there is an invasion of Ukraine. So, and it's that when we heard the debate being debated in the European Parliament, there were a sizable number of MEPs, members of the European Parliament, lawmakers, who were saying that this is just the wrong track to go down, that this constant anti-Russia rhetoric, which we've been seeing building up now for years and years, and these constant threats about the SWIFT system, which is, you know, effectively the international trading and currency system, to cut Russia off from SWIFT and so on. And it's the type of rhetoric that really has been unhelpful, according to many lawmakers. So we've seen an escalation in the threats. We've seen the likes of Joe Biden talking about making sure that the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline project between Russia and Germany, that just will be scrapped if there's an invasion of Ukraine.
Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 agreement are engaged in intense negotiations aimed at reviving the landmark accord. Iran's foreign minister says it's time for the U.S. and the European side to show they're willing to reach an agreement by making political decisions quickly. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made a comment in a meeting with EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell and the EU coordinator in the Vienna talks, Enrique Mora. The Iranian minister says had it not been for Tehran's initiatives, the sides would not be as close to the deal as they are now. He insisted, however, that Tehran's red lines will be in place. Also, in an interview with CNN, the official said that the West, the U.S. in particular, is responsible for a possible failure of the talks.
Now we are at a very sensitive time, and the other side should be realistic. And if the talks fail, we believe that it is the Americans and the other side that are responsible for it. And the Islamic Republic of Iran has shown its seriousness and has shown that it really wants the deal to be done.
According to the top diplomat, Tehran's demands, including a verifiable removal of all sanctions inconsistent with the agreement and guarantees for the fulfillment of commitments by other parties, are absolutely reasonable. The 8th round of negotiations to restore the deal is underway in the Austrian capital, Vienna. We've reached out to political analyst Mustafa Khoshesh for his take on the ongoing talks in Vienna on the revival of the JCPOA.
Even those who were not sure about the real intentions of Washington have now come to agree with this view that the Americans are just looking for a zero-sum game. They just want to win concessions without making any kind of compromise. In the last few days, they've been showing a buyer's remorse, and they are running the table over again and again and again. And this is nothing new, you know. This is kind of a negotiation tactic of the United States. The American administration doesn't have the needed power and the needed flexibility to make a political decision. And by political decision, we mean compromise, gives and takes. And Americans are just very much incapable of making the final decision, or they just pretend to be incapable. So they have been stonewalling the talks in the past 3 or 4 days.
The joy and celebrations breaking out in Bamako, the capital of Mali, over a planned withdrawal of French troops. President Emmanuel Macron says that French troops will leave Mali in an orderly fashion over 4 to 6 months, but the country's ruling junta insists the pullout needs to happen without delay. Relations between the two countries deteriorated sharply after Mali's army seized power in a coup d'etat in 2020. France has some 5,000 troops deployed across the Sahel, the majority of them in Mali. Paris says its troops are tasked with fighting militants in the region, but Mali says the former colonial power intends to partition the country. Academic and journalist Mustafa Fattori believes that the French military presence has worsened the security situation in Africa. It will most likely continue to do so in the future as well.
I think the security situation in the Sahel region, extending from all the way to in the east to Sudan, is less stable, less secure than it was in 2013, when first France sent its troops to fight what it calls jihadists and terrorist groups. So the whole area has been, I wouldn't say mainly because of the French military intervention, but that was a contributing factor. The whole area has been destabilized much worse than it was. The number of attacks by terrorist groups has increased and has been a trans-border problem, not only in Mali, but we have seen it in Niger, we have seen it in Burkina Faso especially, where there has been a recent military takeover, mainly for this reason of lack of security. So the same problem is existing in Chad in a different form. And then all the way to Sudan, probably the contagion, the effect will continue.
Somalia's energy minister has angered the top officials for signing a deal with an American company to exploit oil and gas off the country's coast. The office of President Mohammed says that the agreement is null and void. It's also issued a decree banning any such agreements with foreign governments and entities during the election period. Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Roble has also dismissed the agreement as illegal and unacceptable. He says that he'll do whatever is needed to protect national resources. Somalia is going through an election process that's more than a year overdue. It's also been marred by violence, including a Saturday attack in the central city of Belle-et-Wayne that killed 14 people. A close associate of disgraced U.S. billionaire Jeffrey Epstein has been found dead in his Paris prison cell. Jean-Luc Brunel had been charged with the rape of minors and held behind bars for more than a year. He denied those charges. Police now investigating the cause of his death. The prominent modeling agent was closely linked to Epstein, the American convicted sex offender who was arrested in 2019. Epstein, too, was found hanged in his New York jail cell while he was awaiting trial over abuse of underage women. The case has also disgraced the British royal family. Just days ago, Queen Elizabeth's second son, Prince Andrew, settled a lawsuit brought against him by Virginia Roberts Giuffre. The woman claims Andrew abused her when she was a teenager after meeting him through Epstein. Nearly 1 month into Canada's protest against COVID restrictions, police now saying significant progress has been made in removing the rallies from the streets of the capital, Ottawa.
Today we've made some very important progress in safely removing this unlawful protest from our streets. At every step in this operation, we've been upfront and clear with the unlawful protesters that they must leave the area. We've advised them of our enforcement efforts so they could continue to make informed decisions. We've backed up those warnings with a deliberate and methodical operation using lawful and safe tactics. At every step, they faced a barrage of resistance.
Now, the official says the police at some point had to use horses, helmets, and batons to secure the safety of officers. Ottawa police chief also called on all the protesters remaining on the streets to go home. Early in the day, police clashed with protesters in the city, using pepper sprays and stun grenades to disperse them. More than 140 people have been arrested and dozens of vehicles seized over the past 2 days. Organizers of the so-called Freedom Convoy say they've asked truckers to withdraw because of the heavy-handed police tactics. The massive crackdown came after Prime Minister Justin Trudeau invoked emergency powers to deal with the situation. The demonstrations initially started in January by truckers opposed to rules that require unvaccinated cross-border drivers to quarantine. The protests then turned into a rallying point for all the people who were somehow opposed to the policies of Trudeau's government. The hundreds of thousands of Italian students have demonstrated nationwide against mandatory work experience after the recent deaths of two teens on the job. In some cities, tensions ran high with scuffles erupting between students and police. From Rome, Max Civoli reports.
On Friday, school pupils held protests in over 40 cities across Italy, demanding the government to put an end to obligatory work placements in the last 3 years of school. The demonstrations were staged after a student, 16-year-old Giuseppe Lenoci, died in a road accident on Monday while he was on board a truck for a school work internship. Last month, another student, 18-year-old Lorenzo Perrelli, was crushed to death by a steel girder of 150 kilos while working in an internship for a private company.
È una vergogna.
They should be ashamed. School principals should be reported to the authorities for striking deals with private companies without being provided assurances on working conditions in factories. They have been reckless and should be punished.
Lavoro non pagato, praticamente sfruttamento.
Schoolwork internship is equivalent to unpaid work. It is just another form of exploitation. In most cases, it doesn't give anything to students. It only helps companies make more profit.
About 3,000 students gathered in central Rome demanding the government to remove the education minister and scrap obligatory work experience programs for high school students introduced by former Prime Minister Matteo Renzi in 2015. In Turin, tension and anger went out of control when a group of students tried to break into the local headquarters of industrial employers group Confindustria and were repelled by police with some batons being wielded, with at least seven officers being hurt.
We are staging protests also to raise awareness over our living conditions as young adults. Our generation is suffering greatly also from the anti-COVID measures, which restricts our freedom to move, to interact socially. We are left alone with our phones following school lessons online, with our psychological scars, and the government is not doing anything to help us.
School dropout levels in Italy are among the highest in the EU, and due to the pandemic, with the government quickly deciding to make all learning remote. Also, the cases of social withdrawal and self-harm among young people are on the rise, healthcare professionals are warning. In the past 2 years, and especially in recent months, Italy has been the scene of protests across the country. Rallies have been held against deteriorating living conditions, mandatory vaccination and health passes, as well as what the protesters describe as the government's mismanagement of the COVID pandemic. Max Civili, Rome.
And that's all for this broadcast from Tehran.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, February 20th, 2022. I'm Atef Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is a Sunday program where your views and messages are presented through emails and letters. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. Or if you have any message for our listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is your program, Listeners Special, the Sunday program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. As you may know, these reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. So all of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us. That is an electronic QSL card because we are in the time of pandemic and we send our listeners an electronic QSL card. So here I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, which I mentioned some of their names here. Bithan Chandra Sunil from India, Bill McDavid from the US, and Heikki Puranin from Finland. Thank you. We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio, your radio. And of course, many people, many of our listeners around the world have sent us emails, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read these great emails. From India, we have an email from Kalol Nath. I wish I'm right in pronouncing this name. And from Argentina, from Southern Hemisphere, we have an email from Nestor D. Fischetto, of course, one of our regular listeners. And from the Northern Hemisphere, from Finland, we have received an email from Heikki Puranen. And the last but not the least in this program, of course, we have an email from Malaysia, from Muhammad Fazli, one of our regular listeners. Please stay with us. I will be back with these great emails. Welcome back. As I said, we've received an email from Kalol Nath from India. Let's see what Kalol tells us. Dear IRIB, thank you very much for your keen interest on listeners' mails and emails. I do appreciate your attention. I am a shortwave enthusiast and I listen to various nations' radio stations. I'm very much interested to know more about your country and your culture and history. A kind of photo about your architecture and your traditions is welcomed. Salam and warm greetings to you, Kalol Nath from India. And thank you very much for sending us this message. We also do appreciate your attention to IRIB English Radio. Kalol Nath from India. So you prefer listening to shortwave radio. You are a shortwave radio enthusiast and you listen to various nations' radio stations and it's great. Of course, most people prefer listening to shortwave radio, a traditional kind of radio, and it's most favorable between many people around the world, and it's great. I do also prefer listening to shortwave radio, a traditional kind of radio. So, if you are interested in the culture and architecture and tradition of Iran, you can listen to various kind of programs about the Iranian culture, traditions, architecture, etc. Through IRIB English Radio. Yes, right now we broadcast a program called Close Up Iran, which introduces Iran's tourist attractions. And I think it is aired on Mondays. You can find the exact time on our website with the address of www.parstoday.com/en. And you can also find the archive of different programs about Iran in this website, including Iranian notable sources of global honor, Iranian family, Iranian cinema, many different programs about the Iranian traditions, culture, and architecture. Kalol Nath from India, my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. Thank you very much for writing to your radio, IRIB English Radio. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon, Kalol from India. And here we've received such a long email from Argentina. This email is from Nestor D. Fischetto. Let's see what Nestor says. Thank you very much for answering my email. I'm really very happy to receive your EQSL. It is a highly valued confirmation for my collection. Regarding the coronavirus pandemic in Argentina, here, we are going through a third wave, in this case, due to the Omicron variant. In total, we have been detecting cases for almost 2 years, with a total of approximately 8 million infections and 120,000 deaths. The third wave, although it is much more contagious, is not proving as lethal, also in part due to the progress of the vaccination campaign. 76% of the population have already received their second dose, and the booster dose is already being implemented in 25% of the people. We also continue with the usual care of the use of face masks and avoid crowds of people, although this is difficult to achieve in a country like Argentina, where we are used to gatherings of people at sports and entertainment events. In particular, my son, my wife, and I were isolated until last week for testing positive for COVID-19. We had fever, cough, and dizziness that lasted a week, but now we are very well. I hope that you in Iran are handling this pandemic in the best possible way. It is a situation that had great drama throughout the world and that we are learning to cope with. Best regards from Argentina. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Nestor Di Fischetta from Argentina. Actually, we're so sorry that you tested positive for coronavirus. Actually, you, your wife, and your son, you said, we're sorry and thank God you're getting well. And thank God you're okay and well right now. Please observe the protocols, using face masks, being isolated, avoid gatherings and crowds, and of course, different kinds of protocols that have been observed in different countries around the world. And we hope that this virus comes to an end soon around the world. There is a question here. Are you vaccinated? Have you received the booster dose of vaccine? Please tell us if you've received it. So we wish that this pandemic comes to an end very soon, not just in your country, Argentina, but also in different countries around the world. And regarding your question about the pandemic in my country, in Iran, for your information, in Iran, the majority of the people have been vaccinated and the majority of people have received the booster dose, that is the third dose. And everything is okay, almost okay in Iran regarding this virus. And my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. And that's all. Please take care of yourself, Nestor Di Fischetta from Argentina in the time of pandemic. And send our greetings to your wife and your son. Write to us soon, Nestor. We are, of course, looking forward to hearing from you soon. And don't forget to tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs in your upcoming email. So, after a short break, I will be back with other emails from around the world. Stay with us. Welcome back from Finland, from one of the coldest, actually, regions of the world in Northern Hemisphere. We've received an email from Heikki Puranin. Let's see what Heikki says. Dear friends, thank you for the verification you sent me recently via email. I enjoy your programs. I wish I could understand your language, Farsi, so that I could enjoy the Farsi programs of IRIB as well. Best regards. Salam and warm greetings to you in this cold winter. This salam and greeting is from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, to you, Heikki Puranin from Finland. We're so glad that you wrote to us. And of course, you said you enjoyed the programs, and that's great. It's a pleasure. We hope... Of course, because you mentioned you like to understand Farsi language, so we hope that you learn it, Farsi language, and then you can enjoy this sweet language. I think Farsi is a very sweet and great language. Then you can enjoy this great language and enjoy it, and then you can listen to Farsi programs of IRIB. The Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. Heikki Puranin from Finland, thank you very much for writing to us. And thank you for telling us and letting us know what do you think about IRM English radio programs and telling us your favorite language, Farsi? So, Heikki Pranin from Finland, my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Malaysia, from Muhammad Fazli. Welcome back. Let's see what Muhammad Fazli from Malaysia, one of our regular listeners, says. So, here's the story. Dear sir and madam, assalamu alaikum and greetings. I have been following IRIB English Radio for a couple of years via shortwave broadcast from my location in Malaysia. But last year, due to the changing of my work shift, I couldn't enjoy regular programs via shortwave. This year, I tried to get some time to listen via shortwave broadcast, but to no avail, I received no reception at all. I waited for weeks for improvement, but there's still no reception of IRIB English Radio at this frequency. Meanwhile, at my location and that time, that is 7300 kilohertz, is strongly occupied by China National Radio. I believe this 7300 kilohertz frequency is not suitable for reception of IRIB English Radio in my region. As far as I know, the change of frequency of season is coming soon. I hope your radio technician or whoever is responsible for the transmission can take notice to avoid any interference with other broadcasters and to improve the quality of radio broadcast. I am eager to listen to IRIB English Radio on shortwave again in my region. For now, I have to use WebHDR to enjoy IRIB English Radio, which is beamed toward Europe. I also listen to IRIB English Radio via podcast on Pars Today website. As you know, both methods require internet connection. I believe other listeners might not have the privilege of a stable internet connection as I did. I hope IRIB English Radio can stay as long as possible because you have a lot of unique programs such as Communique and Subcontinent, which offer different and unheard issues of the current event. That's all from me now. I wish the IRIB team and Iranians are in good health. Salam and warm greetings to you, Muhammad Fazli from Malaysia, and many thanks for writing this email to us and telling us your troubles with listening to shortwave in your region, because you said you changed your work shift and in your new place in the new region, you can't enjoy the regular programs of IRIB English Radio, and that's a pity. Of course, we will inform our engineers and technicians about this trouble, and then you can enjoy the IRIB English Radio programs. But for the time being, you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/en, and it has also the live, of course, it has the live coverage of the events, and it has the live broadcast of IRIB English Radio. You can enjoy it for the time being through our website. But of course, my colleagues, our radios, technicians and engineers will fix the problems, and then you can enjoy the programs as usual on the shortwave. Muhammad Fazli from Malaysia again. Thank you very much for telling us these troubles. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card, an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Tell us in your upcoming emails, tell us if your problem is fixed. Thank you, Muhammad Fazli from Malaysia. Stay with us. Anna, what can I wish for you? The best thing I can wish for our listeners around the world is being in good health. Thank you for being with us. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and in particular the listeners special. And goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. Today we're going to be looking at a subject and answering a question that sometimes pops up in the minds of people, and it's a question that a lot of people who are religious scholars are often asked. The question is this: exactly how much reward and sawab do we get for sending our salutations upon the Holy Prophet? Sometimes we think that small actions that we perform, small acts of worship, small acts of obedience, small acts of ibadat that we perform, sometimes we think that just because they're small, they probably have a small amount of reward. You know, and if we want to get a lot of reward, we have to do something that's very time consuming. You know, have to do, for example, you know, pray all the night prayers or read the whole Quran in order to get a lot of sawab. But this is a common misconception, which is actually incorrect. A lot of times, a lot of acts of obedience are such that they have a lot of sawab and otherworldly reward to them. And in using Islamic terminology, we could say that they have a lot of barakat to them. They have a lot of grace to them. Barakat is like one of those Islamic terms that, you know, we use, but sometimes it's often misunderstood. This word means that something is small, it's minuscule, it seems to be very insignificant, but it has a lot of benefits to them. One of the things that, one of the things that is such is this benediction and salawat that we send upon the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. In order to explain this, we can examine a tradition regarding the benefits of the salawat. In the night ascension of the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, when the Prophet was uplifted and took to the heavens by God Almighty, on his way there, he saw an angel. This angel was calculating the number of raindrops that fall from the sky. And this angel was amazing. It had thousands of hands, each hand. It had thousands of arms. Each arm had 1,000 hands. Each hand had, 1,000 fingers. Each finger had 1,000, knuckles, and so on and so forth. And he said to the Prophet that, I can calculate the raindrops, every raindrop that fell from the sky to the earth, from the beginning of creation to the end, but there is one thing that I cannot calculate. Hisabun la aqdiru alayhi. I cannot calculate it. Bima indi min al hifse wa tazakkuri wal aidi wal asabe. Even with my great memory and, all my hands, I still cannot calculate it. The Prophet asked him, Ayyu hisabin huwa. What is this calculation that even you, with all your hands, are unable to perform? So the angel said, قَوْمٌ مِنْ أُمَّتِكَ يَحْضُرُونَ مُجْتَمَعًا فَيُذْكَرُ اسْمُكَ عِنْدَهُمْ فَيُصَلُّونَ عَلَيْكَ. If a group of people from your nation, your followers, come together and you are remembered, your name is mentioned, and they send their benedictions upon you, they send their salutations upon you, the reward that they will be given for such a small act of worship and respect that they show to you is so great that even I cannot calculate it. This is one of those beautiful hadiths and traditions that shows us the benefits and virtues of the salawat, and actually it conveys to us the idea that the reward for this is incalculable. It's so big that it's incalculable and incapable of being even counted by the angels. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the virtues and incalculability of the rewards of the benedictions upon the Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In Britain, Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been asked by the Metropolitan Police to fill in form as part of an inquiry into breaches of COVID rules at No. 10 Downing Street. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's political correspondent Aubrey Allegretti. The piece is titled, Boris Johnson Hands in Police Questionnaire on Partygate. In Britain, Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been asked by the Metropolitan Police to fill in a form as part of an inquiry into breaches of COVID rules at No. 10 Downing Street. Boris Johnson has completed and returned the questionnaire he was sent by Scotland Yard, in which he was expected to defend his attendance at alleged parties under investigation. The Prime Minister was asked by police to fill in the form on Friday, 11th of February, as part of the Operation Hillman investigation into social gatherings in breach of COVID rules between 20th of May 2020 and 16th of April 2021. Number 10 Downing Street confirmed the Prime Minister has complied with the Metropolitan Police request for his answers to be submitted within a week of receiving the form last Friday. Downing Street has previously said his responses will not be made public. Police officers involved with Operation Hillman, which is examining whether COVID restrictions were broken in Downing Street and across Whitehall, sent formal questionnaires to about 50 people as they look into the details of alleged COVID rule breaking. It comes as a union representing civil servants said it had pushed for officials involved in the investigation to be able to consult notes on the evidence they gave to the Sue Gray inquiry to help inform their Metropolitan Police questionnaire. Senior civil servant Sue Gray carried out an inquiry into claims of lockdown breaches at the top of government, but has only published an interim report while she waits for police investigation to be completed. Out of 16 events Sue Gray reviewed, police are investigating 12 of them, including as many as 6 that the Prime Minister Boris Johnson is reported to have attended. Dave Penman, the General Secretary of the Association of First Division Civil Servants, or FDA, said the decision to allow the notes to be reviewed followed an effort by the union, which represents senior and middle management public servants. To be clear, this has been agreed after a request from us, the Association of First Division Civil Servants, their trade union, he tweeted. They will only be able to see what they said in their own interview to assist them in completing the questionnaire from the Metropolitan Police, who have raised no objection to this. It is understood that the Metropolitan Police had no objection. Senior civil servant Sue Gray said it was not standard practice in internal investigations such as this to share notes with interviewees, but said in a letter seen by The Guardian that she had decided, as an exceptional measure, that they would get limited access. Meanwhile, it has emerged that Downing Street staff being questioned by police about alleged lockdown breaches will be allowed to review notes on the evidence they give to the Sue Gray inquiry. Those spoken to as part of the Cabinet Office probe were told they could see the notes with a member of Sue Gray's team present, but would not be allowed to bring a phone into the room, to be accompanied by a lawyer, or to request any changes. Senior civil servant Sue Gray admitted that it was not standard practice in internal investigations such as this to share notes with interviewees, but said in a letter seen by The Guardian that she had decided, as an exceptional measure, that they would get limited access. This will let interviewees view the evidence they gave to her before it passed on to police, who have opened a separate criminal investigation nicknamed Operation Hillman. Dave Penman, head of the Association of First Division Civil Servants, trade union that represents many civil servants, said he had made the request on the interviewee's behalf. He added, "They will only be able to access notes of their own internal interview, their own words, to assist them in completing the questionnaire given to them by the Metropolitan Police." It is understood that the Metropolitan Police had no objection. The deadline for Boris Johnson to submit the questionnaire sent out to all those believed to have attended gatherings passed on Friday night. Number 10 Downing Street has confirmed the Prime Minister has returned his questionnaire. He was sent the document by the Metropolitan Police last Friday and given 7 days to complete it. He is expected to argue he broke no rules because he used number 10 as part of his working day, given that it is both his home and an office shared with hundreds of others. More than 50 questionnaires have so far been issued to Downing Street staff, and the outgoing Metropolitan Commissioner, Cressida Dick, said last week that some, but probably not all, may very well end up with a fixed penalty notice. Alex Shelbrook, the MP for Elmet and Rothwell, became the latest backbench Conservative MP to express his anger with the Prime Minister. In an email to a constituent, he said, "I've always sought to be straight-talking with my constituents, so you will not hear me attempting to defend the indefensible. I'm angry at events of recent weeks at Westminster, as I know others are too." Alex Shelbrook said he had followed COVID rules to the letter, adding that he had not seen his parents for 15 months, even when I technically could when rules relaxed, because he believed the public holds MPs to a higher standard. He would not reveal whether he had submitted a letter of no confidence in the Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Another senior backbench Conservative MP told The Guardian that they did not believe the respite for the Prime Minister would continue indefinitely. "Even if we have up to a month of calm, all the underlying issues remain," said the former minister, who suggested the pressure on Boris Johnson was coming in waves. Commenting on claims by Prime Minister's allies that he believed the events he attended were work functions, they said, "That won't wash. Ignorance is no defense." Just listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
And every day, every night and every day, never forget to say La ilaha illallah, never forget to say La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a heralder of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a beautiful tradition narrated from Imam Ali alayhi salam regarding the virtue of making other people happy, filling the hearts of other people with happiness. Right? We have a lot of beautiful traditions narrated from the infallibles regarding this virtue. So in this tradition, the Imam says the following: by the one whose hearing encompasses all voices, Imam Ali alayhi salam swears by God, and then says, no sooner does one fill somebody else's heart with happiness than Allah creates a special grace for him from that very happiness. And so when you make somebody happy, obviously when we say make somebody happy, we mean within the parameters and within the confines of Islamic law. I mean, we're not talking about making somebody happy through unlawful and un-Islamic means. So you gave somebody a nice gift, you presented him with some assistance that he required, and in this way he became happy. You said something nice to him, you smiled at him. It could be something so small and insignificant as that, but in any case, you made the person happy. Once the moment that you make this person happy and you fill his heart with happiness, Allah creates from that happiness a grace, some kind of the actual word that the Imam uses is lutf. Right? Lutf can be translated as grace. It could be translated as assistance, or it can be translated in other ways. God Almighty gives you a gift. That gift, that grace, that blessing, that assistance is such that when he is faced with a calamity, the grace will pass over it like water flows over a slope until this grace chases it away as wild camels are chased away. Meaning when you make somebody happy, when you fill the person's heart with happiness, Allah will give you a grace. And then later on, right, that grace will assist you when you become afflicted with some problem. For example, let's say you're about to lose your job. Or let's say you're about to get sick. Or let's say that, something is going to happen to one of your family members. That grace will prevent that calamity from occurring, prevent it from occurring from you. Right? So it's not such that this happiness that you've created for this person is going to have an otherworldly reward for you in the hereafter. You might even see its effects in this world, when you become afflicted, or you're about to become afflicted with some problem, that good deed that you did, it can prevent it from occurring. Right? This is perhaps why this importance of placing happiness in other people's hearts is probably why the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is narrated to have said, "There is a place in paradise called the House of Happiness, which none shall enter except those who cheered up the orphans from amongst the believers." Of course, this is a hadith with specifically regard to making orphans happy, but it's also an instance of what we were talking about. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the virtue of making other people happy in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
This Monday.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.